totally with the proponent's original report, except in a couple of areas that regarding a seawall. And we weren't concerned with the seawall because he wasn't asking for that permit, and that was to be handled by the state and Corps of Engineers. Based on the fact that we had two reports that said that the project was buildable and that the zone was allowed for and the comprehensive plan already allowed for, I voted to let the condominium portion of it go ahead and proceed.
Any questions?
I've just
got a couple. I think the line of questioning that the committee's been pursuing, I'm sure, is difficult, but I think I agree with Senator Hurd to the extent that, I mean, people are certainly have different viewpoints on things at different points in their lives. I think the concern that the committee is expressing has to do with the feeling of if someone has been somehow wronged by the process, you need to make some kind of retribution to them and that sort of thing. And you are going to be in a position where you're going to be writing rules and regulations that are going to have to apply evenly and based on the statutory authority that we're trying
That's
to
right.
define. Let me just rephrase a couple of the questions okay. from last week and see if, knowing that we've amended House Bill 2295. On a substantial compliance and partial acknowledgement issue, and I think to date no one is exactly sure what we did until it comes out of the word processor, which is sometimes different than what we put in. As a matter of fact, quite often. If you were faced as a commissioner with a plan in which there was an area in small area in violation of the gold, but the rest of the plan was acknowledgeable. Mm-hmm. And you had to make a decision under basically what the existing law is.
Based on the existing law today?
Existing law today.
Okay.
No, let's say the existing law before we amended 2295, let's say it had partial acknowledgement and substantial compliance as two of your tools available to you.
Okay. Okay,
your choices basically are you can, and this I guess was the distinction I was trying to get at, you can partially acknowledge the plan and then leave that small area that's not in compliance, small geographical area not in compliance, for further work, or you can acknowledge the whole plan on the basis that it's a small area and even though it doesn't apply, the goals don't apply to it and sum total things, that's okay. Mm-hmm. You see the distinction? I was just wondering if you could reflect on that. You may never be in that position because we changed the law.
Yeah. If I understand your question, plan can come up when there'd be a small area which would not be in compliance with the goals.
Yeah, it's clearly a violation of the goal.
Clearly a violation of the goal. Yet the substantial compliance provision says that, if it's 99% in compliance with the goals and there's some few technicalities that are in there that you should go ahead and approve it is the way it's kind of paraphrasing the way I understand the legislation to be. I think you'd have to take a look at and see if it was a clear clearly against the goals and the impact of it. If it was like a very valuable resource, you wouldn't say no, that's not substantial compliance, and you'd say okay, that's an area that has to be set aside and get worked out. If it's a thing, a kind of a marginal thing, on well, is it really prime farmland or is it kind of marginal land? And we're talking about 10 acres and we're talking about a 50 or 200,000 acre county, and is it really that significant to hold up the whole process and take the time? I'd say it substantially complies and go on to the next plan.
Okay, let me see if I can just sort of run that back to you. Would it be fair to say that you feel if you have a small area, you got to look at them obviously on an individual basis?
Right.
Okay. That's the first point. Secondly, that if it's just because it's small doesn't necessarily mean you go with substantial compliance. You think
that's
it
right.
ought to be evaluated on its particular
right.
circumstances.
Some small areas are very valuable resources.
Okay. Let me see here. He had another question. You may have. Did someone else have a question? I want to look through your statement first and see if. Dave, do you have?
No, I'm just all worn out.
You're just all worn out.
Be gone.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry, go on. Yeah.
Do we have a statement of rights? I need to look at this.
Well, I'll just go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
You got one? Okay, you spoke several times, I think, in your statement, and I think at the previous meeting that you felt there needed to be more flexibility in the process, and I don't think I disagree with that. Do you feel by more flexibility, you feel that the commission should water down its existing interpretation of the law, or
no? By more flexibility, I think if, when you get right down into the nitty-gritty working part, when you've got the county or the city planners over here and you've got the staff planners over here, they're sitting down, there's always give and take. It's not an exact science, land planning is. It's a interpretation. Is that really valuable farmland, or is it kind of marginal? Is that really a valuable clam bed, or is it just like all the other clam beds within 15 square miles? There's give and take there, and if there's flexibility at that level, you're going to get the plans a lot more that you're going to work a lot further toward compliance if you can see some flexibility on both parties there, rather than, by golly, that's the way it is, that's the way I interpret it, and there's no change. That's what I mean by flexibility. I don't mean saying we're going to take all the work that's been done and say, well, gee, it really didn't mean that, we really mean this.
I really don't want to take a lot of time here, but I'd like for you to try to share with me your how you feel about mitigating estuaries within estuaries and between estuaries, and the question of banking, that issue of mitigation being banking within the estuary. And are you familiar with those kinds of issues? I think so.
By banking, you're talking about mitigation banking, resource banking, or are you talking about financial banking?
I'm talking about resource banking within the estuary or within another, that sort of mitigation process that apparently goes on. And I'm not down there working day to day with it, but I have some idea about what, and we've had some of that floating around. So could you share with me your philosophy about whether you think that's a good idea?
I think mitigation is a good idea. I think it's going to be a very hard one to actually implement in a way that everybody can say that's the way the law was intended. It's very hard to say that 3 acres of eelgrass in the lower part of Yucuna Bay is worth 2.5 acres of marshland in the upper. Who makes those judgment calls? When I was on that committee, some of the biologists and marine resource people said, I can't tell you that this is worth that. I can kind of give you a feel. I think it's equitable. So that's kind of what we're looking at. But even though you can't be precise and say that 3 acres of eelgrass is worth 1.5 acres of marshland and 1/4 acre of clam beds, the idea is still worthwhile and it's worth pursuing. And we're not going to be precise when we do that, but we're going to keep a semblance of a balance in our estuaries, and that's important. That's important both from a resource standpoint and also from an economic standpoint. I wouldn't want Yucuna Bay to be all dredge and fill. Would be valued. The value of people living here just wouldn't be there. The banking process, I think, makes sense because, for instance, in most estuaries, the best way to mitigate is take an area that had been dammed earlier times, say for grazing land, that originally was salt marsh, and open that up. We have some areas, one slough that might be 60 acres, a boon slough, which would return 60 acres of marshland into the estuary, actually increase the estuary by 60 acres. And it would be simple by just opening up the dikes that have been placed there. I think the ports talked about going out and acquiring that 60 acres at a great expense and opening that up And yet the dredge fill project they have in mind might only be 4 acres. Well, if the mitigation process is, okay, you definitely mitigate a lot more than what a degradation you've caused, there's some left over in your bank for some future work. Makes sense to me.
Chairman?
I'm going to finish.
Oh, go ahead.
I do need to share with him my philosophy about that. And I think it, I want to ask you one more question. How far do you think you can go with that?
With mitigation?
Well, with the whole, do you see that as a, do you think that that, so the mitigation can be overused in any way? Or, I mean, I guess, do you think that there's a, there is some lines that need to be drawn in terms of mitigation, the size of mitigation, the extent of mitigation, and or banking that's involved? And then I want to make my statement. And then I'll be done.
I'm not really familiar enough with all the estuaries to
I'll tell you your basic philosophy, and I'll tell you mine when you're done, or maybe I'll tell you first. But I'm interested in your basic philosophy, and I want to find out whether you've thought about it, because I have thought about it some after hearing some of the bills we have around here, and I have a concern about some of those issues. And I
don't think you could say that you can completely change the whole character of an estuary and keep a natural balance there because you've mitigated. I don't think man can mitigate. We've got the know-how to mitigate in such good detail that we could almost relocate, say, Yaquina Bay because it fit our convenience, and yet create another Yaquina Bay through mitigation. I think mitigation can only work so far. I think it can work well in areas that have been taken away, like an example, this dike area. I don't think it's going to work very well to go out and actually dredge out areas to create new clam beds. Some examples I've heard about that has not worked very well.
I would just briefly say, my concern is when we get all the way down with all this mitigation, we're going to have one big mud pie that we continually push around and, you know, push it out here a little and move it over here, and the basic value of the estuary, which is to, you know, the whole development of the food chain, and the, you know, we can talk about size and replacement and all of those, and with a whole lot of pushing around, I'm not sure that we can. I agree with what you just said, and that makes me feel a little more comfortable, frankly.
Chairman?
Sir Dave?
I want to give you a piece of my philosophy on that, too. Since I was the first one as a federal official to put a hold on dredge and fill permits to start to set up protections for the estuaries in the Pacific Northwest, I tell you my feeling, and in matter of fact, it was a feeling of the citizens of Newport. That we had to take some tough stances in the 70s if we were going to have any estuary left. Some of the leadership that helped evolve that came from the Marine Science Center down there, because I'd been involved with the Sea Grant College and what have you. And I think that the thing that bothers me is that you hear people talk about mitigation, but each estuary is a unit unto itself, and you were saying that a little bit to us, is a unit unto itself. Just because you do something in one doesn't mean it opens up some estuary down the block. And there are certain areas of the estuary that simply are not to be mitigated. How do you mitigate them? It's a resource that is a set-aside resource. I hope you bear that in mind, and that's some of the way I feel. It goes a little further, I think, than just re-establishing the pie. Sure, you open some salt marshes and maybe that free, but there are certain areas of estuary, and Coos Bay is a technical example. We get into World War X every time something happens, they always want to fill in a few more feet, and what the hell. I think the point is there are certain areas of estuary that never are going to be mitigated, and just nothing you can do. It means that it's just a no-go. Would you agree with that?
Yes. I seem to mean mitigation is to take care of dredge and fill projects in development areas some conservation areas, but there's no mitigation in natural resource areas.
And I think that's what worries me, because I think some of the leaders that led to my change in thinking as a federal official on how to do this, and indeed helped change, I think, the whole concept of Oregon's conservation movement and how we dealt with estuaries originated in your community.
I've always been proud that Newport's been a leader in estuary planning.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Herbert, you have more questions?
Just one, Mr. Hamstreet. You served as one of the original commission members of the Economic Development Commission.
That's right.
Governor Paul's. What, of course, the Economic Development Commission today isn't what it used to be, and I think we should be thankful for that. I see real progress being made in economic development, a changing role for that commission, and a more serious role in economic development department generally. What experience did you bring away from that? You've served. Were you on the Newport City Council at the same time that you were on the Economic Development Commission?
I believe I was. I might have been on the council a little after I was appointed to the Economic Development Commission, but I know I served both positions concurrently.
This really isn't directed to land use specifically, but what's your perception of the Oregon Economic Development Commission, the direction you see it going? Have you kept in touch with it?
I haven't kept in touch with it until just recently. I'm a personal friend of Phil Bledin. I felt that the commission did languish quite a bit after I left, and there for an 8 or 10 year period of time. I do think that they're making a lot of progress. I think there's a few things yet that they can do, but you can't change everything overnight. I think Phil Bledin is very concerned about getting the Economic Development Department active in creating new jobs. I think some of the other commissioners there and the staff are the same way.
What specifically did you, as specifically as you can remember, this isn't always fair for us to ask you questions about your past, but you served as chairman of the Yaquina Bay Estuary Task Force.
Yes.
What were some of the things you were doing there on that task force?
The Lincoln County appointed a task force, and I think there were about 20 members in that force. In addition, there were representatives from all the resource agencies, the National Marine Fisheries, Federal Fish and Wildlife, all the state resource agencies, Corps of Engineers, LCDC Fieldman was there, Bob Cartwright, sometimes Economic Development had someone there, once in a while someone from AOI. Then you had the port districts, the city council, some representative city council, and also from the industry, fishing, and lay people on that body. And our charge was to come up with a plan for the estuary. My main task was to keep the job moving, to help outline the parameters of how we were going to get the thing done. And I had very good staff help there, particularly with Matt Spangler. And we came up with a framework on how we were going to do the plan. And once we came up with the framework and we all came up with a consensus how the framework was going to work, it started coming easier then. We divided the area into large management units, and then we divided that into smaller units. We did inventory resources of those units. And based on the inventory resources, the pieces kind of started to come together, what it should be, whether it should be a natural or a conservation or development part of the estuary. We had some real conflicts, particularly with the timber industry and the fisheries resource on log storage, and with the fisheries people and the oyster growers on growing oysters. And
how was that resolved?
It was finally resolved by getting the timber industries to agree to one representative, and getting the resource people to agree to one representative, and putting the two of them in a room and making them work out some trades. And it was one of those deals where the resource people took this position and the timber people took this position, and I knew they were taking those positions because they thought if they didn't take that position, they'd never get to hear. And surprisingly, it wasn't, once you got them in a room, it wasn't that hard to get them to the middle ground. In the oyster situation, we had to take an exception, but that exception was supported by the resource people.
And then the LCDC Estuary Classification Committee, you served on that. And
yes, that was shortly after LCDC was formed. They felt that it was important to classify the estuaries, and we came up with three classifications, either development, conservation, or natural. The idea being that natural estuaries would receive very little state or federal funding for dredging fill projects. Conservations would receive a little more, and the emphasis would be development for dredging and filling would be in the development estuaries.
And then finally, the Land Board's Mitigation Task Force.
Well, after the legislation was passed to require mitigation, the State Land Board was charged to come up with a system of doing it. And that task force was called together trying to help develop a system for that.
I don't know if anybody ever asked you this, and maybe it's a naive question. Why do you want to be on LCDC?
After listening to that, probably has a real question.
I guess the same answer would be, why do you want to serve as a senator? That's facetious. I'm concerned about Oregon. I feel that that we can improve our land process by some flexibility at the staff level and by some clear interpretations. And by improving it, we'll ensure that we continue to have it. A friend of mine who was kind of a mentor always told me, you put back into your community what it gives you. And my community, my state's given me a lot, and I feel obligated to put it back in there, and I feel I have some experience in land use planning. And I didn't seek the position, but when I was asked to serve, I agreed to do that.
A couple of final questions, Mr. Hastert. Did you ever vote against a major development when you were on the city council?
Yes.
Okay, and you feel comfortable with making those kinds of decisions as a commissioner?
Yes. I can honestly say that I don't have any allegiance or ties to any one group, whether it's environmental groups such as Thousand Friends, or whether it's the Oregon Home Builders Association, or AGC. I think that on the task force and some of the other commissions, I've been respected as being someone who's fair.
I don't want you to think that I'm questioning your integrity by my questions. I'm just trying to make myself comfortable to give you a fourth vote that you desperately need.
Yes, I voted against some developments that I thought were not in the best interest of Newport.
Just one more line of questioning. One of the things that we did put into the 2295 was the question of the coastal goals and the requirement that they be reviewed with recommendations, I believe, brought into the legislature or the joint committee, or the joint legislative committee on land use for how those things ought to be modified. And under what circumstances would you declare a conflict of interest? What do you feel that would constitute that?
If the city of Newport's plan has not been acknowledged, and Lincoln City's plan has not been acknowledged, and I have an interest in a corporation who has a project in Lincoln City, that project is delinquent in some Bancroft assessments to the city, and theoretically the city could apply pressure on me to vote from that. I'd have to abstain from anything with Lincoln City, and I think Newport, because I was on the other side in helping prepare the plan, then I probably would abstain from that. And the only place the goals would affect Newport, because the estuary plan's already been approved, would be the shoreland goals. And I don't see any real major conflict there.
Okay, thank you. I have no further questions, Mr. Sturgeon. Thank you very much. I appreciate your coming back down here and spending this time with us.
It's my pleasure.
Sure, we'll see each other again.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir, Dash.
Got to ask a couple questions.
Yes.
What is your opinion of the status of House Bill 2556? Did we pass it out?
we did pass it out, and it's my intention as soon as I get to my committee here so we can take action on all these things, I was going to bring it back, and I'm going to amend my amendments, but you'll still have your minority report. I'm going to water down my amendments, make some alterations in them, and then we'll go out there and
go do it.
Do it to each other.
Can I have a 10-minute recess? You've been
yes,
a taskmaster.
Yes, we'll come back a quarter after, and I will try to round up the rest of the committee so we can...
Well, I'll tell you, you got about four different meetings going on.
Yeah, I appreciate that. We just want to take some quick action on a few things.
Okay?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hampson.
Thank you.
Hi, kid. Buy you a drink.
Yeah, I bet you would.
Buy you a drink. Come on up here. I'll buy you a liquor. Liquor and place. Okay.
Disorder. First, I'd like to go to work session on House Bill 2556, and the chair would move that the committee rescind the action by which they voted the bill to the floor.
Which bill is that?
2556.
That's your fish bill.
So, objection?
So ordered.
Chair now moves that on House Amendments House Bill 2556-7. That lines 7 through 10 be deleted, and then on line 12 the word or be deleted, and on line 13 the words genetic degradation be deleted. That would also entail then that the semicolon in line 5 would go out and the numbers would be removed. A small b would be removed. So it would read, "It is in the best public interest to ensure that hatchery practices of the permittee do not pose a risk greater than that posed by public hatchery practices of depletion to any natural run of anadromous fish on any population of resident game fish."
Mr. Chairman, I know you've worked hard on it, but I would tell you that I object to that and do not believe that cures a basic flaw in the bill, so we'll oppose the amendments.
I understand, and you will have a minority report.
And I will have, which is on the desk already.
Okay, clerk, call the roll.
Senator Day?
No.
Senator Cohen?
Aye.
Senator Hamby?
No.
Senator Hurd?
No.
Senator Starkovich?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Kitzhaber?
All right, so we're...
And I officially serve notice of the minority report, which I've placed on the desk.
Okay. I would move, Senator Monroe sends amended House Bill 2556 to the floor for due pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Day?
No.
Senator Cohen?
Aye.
Senator Hamby?
No.
Senator Hurd?
No.
Senator Starkovich?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Kitzhaber?
All right, so we're going to the bill. Now move to the executive appointments.
Mr. Chairman, I appointed myself to carry the minority report.
Yes, all right. We will...
just hope we have a little fun.
Okay, let the record show that Senator Day will carry his minority report.
Oh, you kid.
Chair will move that the E&E committee send the reappointment of Grace S. Finney to the Energy Facility Siting Council and set it forth a new confirm recommendation. Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Day?
Aye.
Senator Cohen?
Aye.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Hurd?
Aye.
Senator Starkovich?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Kitzhaber?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Word.
I'd like to move that we send the appointment of Mr. Hamstreet to the Land Conservation Development Commission and confirm the appointment. I recommend we confirm the governor's appointment.
Senator Day moves that we send the appointment of Clyde Hamstreet to the Land Conservation Development Commission to the Senate floor with a do confirm recommendation. To discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Day?
Aye.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Hurd?
Aye.
Senator Starkovich?
No.
Senator Monroe?
No.
Senator
Kitzhaber? Aye. So
ordered. I'll be glad to carry that.
Senator Day will carry that.
Just carrying Grace.
I'll carry Grace. I'll carry Ms. Finney. Excuse me. We'll now open a work session on House Bill 2625 relating to home occupations. We do have a set of amendments.
2625?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. give me a minute here. Got so many bugs.
Kill.
What is it?
Home occupation fire.
Oh.
Home occupations.
The bill. Anyway.
Oh, good. Hey, kill it. Kill it right here.
The amendments which Mr. Sadler is handing out basically replace Section 2 and address at least most of the concerns that were raised. It clearly states that the industry will employ no more than 5 persons. On line 13, no new buildings are going to be constructed, particularly for this purpose. The activity has to be carried out in buildings normally associated with the use permitted in that zone. There's an interference standard in D on line 15. It allows local governing bodies to add additional conditions as they see fit, on line 17 through 19. That was in the old bill. I believe sub 4 was 2, that this does not, the home occupation should not be used as justification for a zone change.
Number 3 is new. Also.
All right, number 3.